Call to order. You want to do an introduction, or do we know everybody here?
I don't believe we could. Have any guests today, so I don't know that that's necessary. We don't have any guests. I just want to make sure you can hear us plainly.
Yeah, no, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm buzzed through this quickly, the action items. Approval of the minutes for the March 13th, 2018.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Motion is approved. And then the financial report.
First page financial report is the cover sheet. Quickly go over that. On the budget overview sheet, which is actually the second page in your financial packet, you will see that we are about 7% expended through August, second month of the year. And due to invoicing, we usually are behind with the career invoice. So this does not include the August Career Center invoice. About $3.5 million of the budget this year are funds that expire June 30th, 2019. Through August, we have spent about $1.5 million of this, which is about 43% of those funds. So we have to spend about $2 million for the remaining of the fiscal year. Of the remainder, about $572,000 of those funds were adult. $743,000 is dislocated worker, and $706,000 is youth. Through August, we were about 15% expended in the administrative expenses. Adult, we were about 10% through August, and if you include the August Career Center invoice, this would put us around 26%. Dislocated worker program was 2 through August, and with the invoice, it was about 4% expended. Youth was 6% through August. And with the Career Center invoice from August, that would put us around 13%. Blue Ridge Sciatica, we have a requirement to spend 20% of our youth program funds on work experience. So for this year, for funds that expire June 30, 2019, that number is $202,955. And through August, we've already spent $72,975, and that's about 36% of that mark.
Well, when does that end, that time
The work experience?
Yeah, when does that
end?
June 30th. June 30th,
next year. Next year.
Yeah, we just started.
Yeah, that's
and Michael, given some of the projections, do we need to already start to work on transitioning some funds from one of the accounts to the others?
At the end of last year, we already approved a $370,000 transfer from dislocated worker to adult. And as of right now, that still puts us on track. Now, I would say in the first 3 months, we'll have a better understanding of how next year's grants are going to be and how they're spent. So I think maybe in maybe a three-month time, we would need to look at transferring more money from dislocated worker to adult. But right now, we are actually on track to spend both.
Was the 370 already reflected then?
Yes, yeah. That was actually in last year's fiscal year. Yeah. And that's money that's carrying over to this year.
I got it. Yeah, okay.
And the only thing I would add to that is that I was at a director's meeting last Thursday and Friday in Frankfurt, and even though the law allows 100% transfer between dislocated worker and adult both ways, based on need, the current administration, John Palish in particular, he seems opposed to that. And even though we don't have a request in currently, he was sitting on, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 requests from other local areas to transfer that money. So I would suggest that if it looks like we're going to have to do that, that we kind of stay ahead of the curve a little bit. Although, as you well know, you have to justify
right
when you're doing it. But they seem to be taking longer.
Maybe start that process then before
critical mass. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Okay. Performance negotiations?
You probably need to vote to accept it.
Oh. Motion to accept the financial report?
So moved.
Second.
And that moves forward. Now.
Now, the performance negotiations, always a fun topic here, especially if you were at the last full WIB meeting. At the last WIB meeting that was on August 14th, there was several state folks in attendance, including Don Talish. And I was pretty shocked when John made the statement that performance negotiations were complete and that all the local areas had agreed upon them and that it was done. Well, in fact, no local area in the state had received the state negotiated rate. We weren't aware that that process had been completed. And we certainly hadn't, even though that it had been discussed in various directors' meetings, there was never any agreement among the directors that we would go with a certain process. And in fact, that's not even allowable under the law, because the law says that the local board, the WIB, will negotiate the local performance standards and the LEOs will approve it. So none of that had taken place. We did, however, on a week later, August 21st, we received from the state notification that the Department of Labor negotiations with the state were complete. They sent us a copy of the standards that they had agreed on, along with a reminder that there is no Department of Labor sanctions attached to the PY1819 performance measures, as performance accountability from the Department of Labor does not begin until 2020. Now, in your packet, you'll have a copy of what the state negotiated standards were with the Department of Labor. And we have to say whether we agree or don't agree. Couple things that I want to point out on that.
Mabel, just a question, as we talk about these performance metrics, can we talk a minute about what is the impact if they're hitting or not hitting these metrics?
Well, I can tell you, when the metrics count, if a local area fails to meet performance 3 years in a row, then that area can be reorganized. And when I say reorganized, that means they can decide someone else will operate the program, establish a new board, the entire, everything that goes with it. That has never happened in the state of Kentucky ever.
How have we done in the last 2 years or 3 years, 4 years?
In the last, since WIOA became law, the local areas have actually received two performance reports, okay? Both of which were prefaced with the statement that they know the information isn't correct. Now, the committee from the Strategic Planning Committee, Ken Trosky had asked that we set up a meeting with Kate Akers, who's with Kentucky Stats, the Kentucky Center for Statistics, and that's the state agency that tracks a lot of different data for different programs. We requested a lot of information about where are these reports that supposedly we were receiving regularly and that they had accurate information. Like I said, we have since confirmed we have two reports, and that's not just us, that's every local area in the state. The information is not correct. And this, I don't know if you can see this, Matt, but this chart was much more readable than what we sent out to you to get it on the page. It shrank, but the state's best efforts, this is what they have turned in to the governor and to the Department of Labor as performance of all the local areas in Kentucky. Now, my concern with this is, one, at my last week at my director's meeting, every director there is saying this is not correct, and we're talking about massive variances. The other concern that I have, and that I've already voiced to the state, is by your own numbers that you collect and that you say are accurate, not only is every area in the state failing, but the state itself failed every single measure. So why would the state negotiate with the Department of Labor a rate that by their own numbers is not attainable? So it is...
And increase the numbers. I mean, as I was looking at us over time, I mean, they essentially took like a 3 or 4% and just added them across the board. So,
and that's a big increase. 3 or 4% is huge.
Yeah, and if we haven't hit it in the past, why would we increase it? So is our action, we'll either accept or don't? And then is there more of a penalty if we don't than if we accept it and don't hit it?
Well, for the next year, as Rachel was referring to in the cover sheet there, it will not count against us. Now, what my discussion that I had last week with the other 9 local directors in the state was, what have you done? Have you decided that you will go with the state standards for this year? Because there was a couple of them that said they didn't intend to, even though knowing that they would not, we wouldn't be held accountable. But in the long run, with the state saying, and this has always been the process, you can renegotiate for PY19 in the second quarter of that year. So next, October through December, we could renegotiate for the next year when they will start tracking it. And based on that, the other 9 local areas have agreed that they will accept the state standards for this year. I've never really had any opposition to accepting the state standards, not only because we're not being tracked, but more importantly, I don't believe if we set a higher performance standard that makes us try any harder. I don't think if we get a lower one that we try any less. Everybody does the very best they can to meet the standards, and if the state negotiates the standards, it's the responsibility of the 10 local areas to do their very best to make sure that we meet that, not only individually as an area, but as the state. So,
yeah, I mean, it sounds like what our response would be that we would say that this is a good goal, this is a good objective, we don't know enough about these standards yet, but that we will try to hit these. I don't want to outright reject them, given that we're the only workforce that rejected other things, right? But I don't want to be, that called out too much. But if there's no accountability to it, then, these are really good goals, and for 2020, we will set our new goals based on our attainments and our confidence in hitting those.
And that is also what I would recommend, Matt. My conversation with Rachel Adams on it was, I said, my concern is if we agree to the state standards for this year, even though I said, are you going to come back next year and say, why are you trying to get lower standards now? You agreed to them last year. And she said that would not happen. She said that hopefully we'll have more accurate information by that time and we'll be able to make a more informed decision on what's a realistic standard for our area. Now, they sent a lot of links for us to look at that were basically useless when we went to them and tried to pull the information. So, long story short, I would recommend, I don't see any benefit to us being the only local area in the state that is saying, no, we won't accept the state standards. Because theoretically, if one demands a lower standard, somebody else is going to have to take a higher one. And to get into that sort of battle when we don't have accurate information and there's no accountability for the coming year doesn't seem a worthwhile effort.
Yeah. I think for this one, that I don't know if the right motion is, but I would say that we make a motion that we respond back to the state that we accept these as non-binding performance measurements. We will absolutely work to hit our goal with these, and we'll evaluate them at the end of the year to set them for 2020.
Exactly. Is that a motion?
That's a motion.
Okay. Second.
Okay.
then that moves forward, right?
The only thing I would add on the end of that is the law requires that the local elected officials, and they have a special call meeting tomorrow, also have to approve it, and I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't agree with the whip on this.
Well, please communicate our understanding and our reservations and our just recognition that there's no penalty language if we don't hit it this year. And we'll work in good faith, as you said. I mean, we're going to work as hard as we can to do the best that we can. We just don't know if these are realistic numbers based on the lack of history and lack of access to data.
I agree.
Can I add stuff? I would just add that the staff, we're also working on, you know, where are these tracked? Why aren't they accurate at the state? Why aren't they matching up? Dr. Trotsky, when we met with KY Stats, we were talking about a lot of the issues with the reports that we got, where it's being tracked, where we're inputting it, why are these numbers not matching? So we're kind of working to try and remedy that in the new system that's coming October 1st, too, so we can try and head it off and have more accurate numbers to make decisions with next year. So.
And we requested a lot of information that the state was saying that they had available on data and where they were pulling it from. And the reports, one of the reports we received had over 20,000 people in it as far as being served. We know we don't have that many people in our system. Tiffany went through, and Amy, I think, like only the first 100, and there was multiple errors in showing people enrolled in two funding streams at the same time, showing folks that were not ever truly entered into the system. They were, I guess, maybe a basic service or whatever. I don't know, Amy, you may want...
People hitting as priority of service like SNAP that we had served in the last 2 years, but their SNAP was from 2002. Mm-hmm. So are they really receiving SNAP benefits? You know, just, I don't know if it was just kind of sloppy report building or whatever, or where it was being input in the system, but we're trying to remedy where the disconnect is so that the numbers can be more accurate.
And I know it may seem to be impossible, but I think we may have overloaded Dr. Trotsky with information because he's yet to respond to me after I sent all of it to him. And it is daunting. So
and the good news is Dr. Akers, with the new system, apparently they're taking the lead on a lot of this reporting.
Right.
And they're kind of data geeks there, right? So they want it to be accurate, and they're, you know, they're interested in trying to figure out where the flaws in the data are and fixing it.
So yes, after the meeting with... She had several of her team there with Dr. Akers. We were hopeful that we're at least moving in the right direction and that we will have access to more accurate reporting information in the next year. That's all.
That's all on that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Down to local policy, adult work experience.
So it's something that we've talked about for a while, and I guess I was overly ambitious when I thought we could have a draft policy available for you today, even as we were making changes this morning. And what I've decided is I just want to make you aware it is not an action item because we don't have a draft policy for you to look at. I want to make sure that we've thought it through, and more importantly, we want to make sure that the people who are actually implementing this policy out there in our direct service provider, that we give them a chance to have some feedback, because very often they come up with things that we haven't necessarily thought of from this level. So that will definitely be on the agenda for the November meeting. We will get a draft policy to everyone ahead of time so they have time to look at it. But it's basically, and we're, you know how the language changes all the time, the jargon and every, well, they're referring to it in the law as transitional employment when you're talking about adults. We have work experience for youth.
Right.
We do not have anything of that nature for adults or dislocated workers. And it took some convincing to me that a dislocated worker would need work experience, but we will explain that there are situations when we send out the draft policy that's applicable, and that's why I guess it's listed in the law as both adult and dislocated worker. but we do not have a policy for you to review today. I would like to have had that so we could get it in place, but we just simply haven't had enough time to. Ethan and Tiffany, and Tiff's sick today, that's the reason she isn't here, but at SETA learned more about transitional employment, and it sort of affected some of the things that we were putting into the policy or thinking about. But I think it'll be a good thing. It's something that we didn't call it transitional employment when I was at EK SET, but it was a policy that we had in place, and it's most definitely needed in certain circumstances, especially when we are sector driven in almost all of what we do. So but there is no action to be taken on it today. We will get the policy out to you well ahead of time so you can review it and provide feedback as well. I would prefer to get it out early enough that you can provide feedback and we could have that incorporated and it could be given final approval in November.
Yeah. So. That's kind of a piece of information I could definitely provide some feedback on from an employer standpoint.
Right, and that's why I said I just don't feel like we've had adequate time to reach out to all the sources that would need to have some say-so. Just like the state's finally sending us some policies to review, provide feedback, you need that because you don't always anticipate everything out there on the front line and how it's going to play out. That's all that I have on there.
Matt, do you have anything to add to that since you're over there?
No.
Now with the SNAP and ENT contract.
Always another fun subject for us. So after the joint meeting of both boards for the second time to discuss SNAP, ENT, and Medicaid, the state has sent a revised, and it was in your packet, SNAP, ENT contract. Now, the SNAP ENT contract is still, in fact, that's what this is. This is 11 pages of problems that we still identified in there. To summarize shortly for you all, the SNAP contract appears to be a mishmash of contracts from different agencies, and because of that, contains contradictory language in certain parts. It quotes the law and WIA regulations, but it does not follow WIA rules, and that's a disconnect that is really, that's not acceptable. I don't think it's allowable. And then, while they did include the fiscal agent, the local grant sub-recipient, and the CLIOs in the agreement is still between the state and the board, although it nowhere expressly indicates who actually receives the funds. That's still an issue. And this is on page 10 under reporting. It actually has the LEOs reporting not only to the state, but to the WIB, which is that's a backwards process. It also says that the WIB is authorized to do business in Kentucky because of the interlocal agreement between the LEOs, and that is not a correct statement because all the interlocal agreement does is it identifies the responsibility and the process for appointing members to the WIB. It does not authorize them to do business in the state of Kentucky, et cetera, et cetera. So that still has to be addressed. That proposed debarment language is still in there, and right. There has been no settlement. So that is still an issue. And all of the language, which is probably the biggest thing to me, that totally indemnifies the state from any wrongdoing, regardless of the cause, and puts the sole responsibility for everything on the fiscal agent, the LEOs, and the WIB is all still in there as well. It also said, which I think is interesting, that even though they can't be held accountable for any wrongdoing, that any lawsuits that are filed would have to be filed in Franklin County. I'm not sure that's possible, but it's that language is in the contract. So, the other flip side of that, and this is Medicaid, which we do not have a revised Medicaid contract, but the situation with the Medicaid waiver, since joint committees of both boards met twice and voted not to sign it, has not improved. In fact, it has worsened considerably. There is a lawsuit in Arkansas. 4,500 people lost their benefits in Arkansas this month, and they estimate another 5,000 will lose it in October. There's articles popping up everywhere, and I hate to bombard everybody's mailbox, but if you're interested in those things, saying that they expect Kentucky to be the next Arkansas, and there's a lot of concern over the fact that this is a medical coverage program and it is not a workforce program. So I view SNAP, ENT, and Medicaid as a joint deal. If we can't do Medicaid, which nobody can right now, despite the fact that the state is moving forward, nobody can do any community engagement under Medicaid because a federal judge has prohibited it. So until that is resolved, I see no point in singling out SNAP and going forward. We're talking about the same clientele. We're talking about moving people back and forth. They are currently, the SNAP folks are being handled by the OET office in Goodwin Drive. I don't want to midstream bring them over for something, which, by the way, the contract still isn't fixed. And then if Medicaid falls through, then what I've said to the state is if and when the lawsuits are resolved and if and when we get acceptable contract language, then we will most definitely be open to discussing signing a contract and getting on board with this. We're not to that point yet. So that's all really I have. I'm happy to answer any questions you have on it, but that's really all I have to add.
We have nothing negative at this point from the state because of this. We're just in limbo on their end.
I'm assuming that they're going to have to procure, if they continue to move forward, for someone to provide SNAP services. They can't move forward. They can procure someone to provide Medicaid services, but that does not seem to make good sense to me, because you can't hire people that can sit around and do nothing because they're not allowed to do that.
Right.
So other than that, and I will, Sherry Johnson, who's the workforce director at Lincoln Trail, was at the joint meeting. This was a discussion at the director's meeting last week as well with John Palish and Doug Beard, the folks that were here in the room. And Sherry has said that until certain these things are addressed, that their board is not, there's other boards that are saying they can't go forward with this as long as, because we've been promised changes, but we're still not, and even though, give credit where credit's due, the state took a stab at some of this, but it is still a terrible construction of a contract. So, that's there's nothing else that's developed because there really isn't much that can be.
Right. Matt, are you good on that?
Yeah, I'm good. I agree.
Next line up, we got state draft policies.
So what's going on with the state is, as a result of the DOL review, which we do not have the report yet, they're saying that they have had to go through the law, and There's 70-some policies. I started to say 78, but they're saying that that's changed. That the state should have had in place at least some guidance on, that they have not. Now, the state's starting to churn these out. We received the first four a couple of weeks ago, and they've asked for comment back. What I've said to the, we submitted our comments. As far as the local board is concerned, once we get a state policy that is final, if it affects our local policy, then we will have to change that local policy, and to change that local policy, we have to bring it to the WIB for approval. Some of the things that the first four policies were, one was on supportive services, one was on priority of service, there was a recapture and reallotment policy, and a federal Pell Grant policy. There were problems with all of them. The one that I think that has every single local area across the state concerned and pushing back on is they have, in the supportive service policy, they set a $5,000 limit of lifetime, and they said it mirrored an ITA policy that was also going to be $5,000. And that is absolutely not a state decision. The local boards in each 10 areas, and the reason it isn't is because the demographics aren't the same. The economy isn't the same. There's all sorts of factors that have to come in when you're figuring out how much you want to set for your ITAs and how much you want to allow for supportive services. And so that's the kind of things that we're looking for. Once we get a final policy from the state, and like I said, for sure when it affects your local policy, we'll submit those changes to you for approval and an explanation, because you all approve every local policy we have. And I just want to make you aware that that's going on, and it's my understanding that they have to have all that completed by June 30th of next year. And we have no idea. We've asked for a list of what policies they're referring to, and we've not received that. The only thing we've received to date is the four initial policies that, as I said, there were issues with all of them, either things that were incorrect or things that were not under state control. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. And I will say, I know this is public meeting and minutes, and we post them, and I'm not allowed to quote anyone directly, but I got two different reports from folks at SETA that indicated that we were the best thing that that team reviewed in the state of Kentucky, and that they were very much, they're focusing on local control and local governance in the coming years, and they would like to use some of our policies as the model.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that made me feel really good, even though I can't say who said it.
Just knowing it was said is good.
Knowing it was said was good. And I do know that the reason we don't have the state report yet is when they left, when the 9-person monitoring team left here, they said it would be 30 to 45 days on issuing a report. But if they needed to request more information from us or from someone, that could take a longer period of time. I talked with EKSEP, that was the other local area that they reviewed. They have not asked EKSEP for any additional information. They have not asked us for any additional information. But they have, I hate to quote a number, but I think it's between 3 or 4 times, asked the state for additional information. So that's why it's not been issued yet. But I look forward to it, and I'm told that we will be given access to that, and we can distribute it to everyone. And I will say, once again, you know, folks, even even less range when the regional administrator, when he was here the year before, and I was talking about we would love to have them come in and review and provide feedback to us. He said, you know, you need to be careful what you ask for because those reviews are extremely in-depth. And I said, no, I would welcome it because if we're doing anything wrong, it's not intentional. So we want to know about it so that we can fix it. And it was a very positive process. I know they talked with Matt. They talked with Judge McKinney. They talked with
Dolly.
Pardon?
They talked to Dolly as well.
They talked to Dolly, and they talked to Kim Minky from the board level. And then we had 9 people that were constantly talking to one of us or some of the direct service provider folks out there and going out and looking at the centers every single day. It was in depth. So I'm glad to hear from my unofficial feedback that what they found was favorable. That's really all I have on that.
That's been good information.
Well, I think so.
We got training events update. And events update.
Yeah, so I had thrown this one on the agenda. Just we had this whole, like, can we go to SETA? Can we get reimbursed for it? You know, are we going to NOB and everything else? And then because there was that policy issue where the state had sort of said that all of a sudden board members weren't eligible. Josh said that they were going to change it, but my understanding is they have not yet. And then as we were looking at this training activity that, right, you know, NOB or SETA in the spring, you know, these are things we need to plan for. But just, you know, I think that's the status of where we are, right?
It is. They have not changed the contract. They have indicated that they're going to, but the contract language is still in there just as it was when it was brought up originally.
So do you want me to follow up on that? Do you want me to send a note? Do you want to send a note?
What I think is what Josh Benton said was that he sent an email saying that it was allowable. But now we had repeated conversations with Judge McKinney and other lawyers in the room saying it's in the contract. So I do believe that that will be changed over the coming months, and I think it will be changed before the spring SETA or the NAWB conference that takes place in March, I think, or somewhere in through there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some early bird discounts. I want to make sure that we are able to take
Absolutely.
Advantage of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to happen. But.
So I can follow up with Josh. And see if he can at least give a timeline that he thinks the contract language will be changed and report back to you on that.
Awesome. Then the other part of this one was just, you know, we've got this training on October 11th. I will not be able to attend. I know, Daniel, you can't attend either. They are going to record the training, but I think you said there's 30-plus people that have signed up and
39.
Are going to be part of it.
39 right now, but I can tell you there's at least 3 county judges on there that haven't responded. And I expect to talk to them tomorrow night and confirm. Daniel, we had you down as you might not be able to attend, but...
I think at the time I wasn't sure how this last final deadline of the year was going to look for me. It's not looking great. So probably at this point, I'd probably have to, if I had to go one way or the other, I'll probably be tied up.
Well, I mean, obviously, if it turns out that you're able to come,
sure.
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
But we will. We have Tab set up to record it. Tab Patterson here. So we will have everything recorded. You can, if you have the time,
okay.
you can go back and watch what's on there.
That'd be great. Yeah.
So we will try. We had a very short window with John Chamberlain on when he could actually, once it had changed, follow up and have this. We will try to do better in the future of doing a a better poll and seeing who can actually be there and try to find a time that at least the key board members that are always active can make it. So.
I'd say for the record, you got over 30 people to show up at the same time for something. You didn't do that. You just didn't do your favorite person, me, right here to them.
So, yes, as of right now, we have 39 confirmed with a tentative on you being in that group, so.
That's great.
And I don't know, I was going to say, was there anything else, Matt, because that was...
No, that was really it. And then I think on the next topic I'd thrown out there to the board membership, just we know that, in October we've got John Phillips, Kim Binky that will walk the board. We've got some other people that are, that I think you can give an update to some new activity, right, that's sort of coming out. So it's just we want to make sure that we can keep the full, if not better than full, membership.
So the updated roster is in your packet. Since our last meeting, Michelle Deans has been confirmed for the board. I think we had her in the works, but at the last... at the joint board meeting, she was not officially on the board yet, even though she was kind enough to attend the training or the meeting. Did she? Actually, I say that, and I don't know.
Yeah, no, she sat right there to your right.
I was going to say, I thought she did. Staff and I had a really great meeting with UPS here. They've reached out to us about their Kentucky Loop program and some of their other initiatives. And it really is pretty amazing. It's changed a lot since the Metro College days, and all they did was the Metro College assistance they provided. But as far as I'm concerned, the best thing that came out of that meeting, these business services folks and Mayfield differently, was we got a new board member.
Good.
Her name is Jessica Conister, and while she's filling out the form right now, she has confirmed that she's willing to serve. She is the HR operations manager, and I'm quoting Pat Murphy, who was one of the ranking UPS representative that was here. She is the HR operation manager for the state of Kentucky and more. So I can't imagine that she wouldn't be approved, is what I'm saying.
Pat recommended her?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. That's where that one came from.
We have some influence from Pat.
I was going to say, for any of those that do not know him, he is also a member of the KWIP.
Yes.
And he was, like I said, it was a great meeting. It was a very productive meeting. And I look forward to working with him more closely. We also have an additional labor rep because...
I see that Tim is going to be retiring.
He is planning to retire in November. We currently have on board, or have brought on board, Waylon Isaacs. Tim is from the millwrights portion of it. Waylon is from the Carpenters Council. So we're thrilled to have them. We've reached out again, to Tim, because over there where they're located, where their headquarters here in Lexington is located, there's Plumbers and Pipefitters Unions there. There is the electrician, Brett, I don't remember the official union name, but it's the...
JATC.
Yeah, electrician union that's over there to see if we can solicit someone else when Tim does come off. I will tell you, it does not matter right now because other areas in the state, Kentucky and Works being one of them, both of their labor reps are from the same union. So there's no problem in that, but Tim is going to retire. So we are still looking for another labor rep. Even though we are in compliance on everything, and we do have the required number of both private sector and others at this point, we need to have
No issue with just having two education people with Dr. Julian dropping?
It is a problem. And it's a problem because if we've got Dr. Trosky, higher education, and if we have two higher education reps, that means we have to have another additional private sector person because you're only required to have one higher education representative on the board. So that is something that's going to have to be discussed.
Okay, so I know Dr. Julian wanted her replacement to be considered. That replacement has not been hired. So it'll be something we'll just have to talk about in next year. But it's not the only thing that we have to go do is fill the one vacant spot that you got there for private sector. Is that where we are?
Actually, we don't have any vacancies. Is that still on? Was that on the?
That was on probably when the packet that went out.
Yeah,
that's the way that they're the person that's rolling on, that space was reserved for them. The reason why the vacant was on there, Matt, is because I've been working with Darlene Bussell at the state with the board certification. It's been going on for about a year. And we went back over that. And for the Mabel's talking about the people who were coming on, she wanted me to acknowledge that those spots are going to be filled, even though it's not an actual vacancy. It's that we have those people coming on. So those were flagged in there as vacant, even though it's not a vacant spot as being out of compliance. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Okay.
Great.
And if it was a vacant spot, Jessica Conister, because she's not on here.
Right.
Would be the fill it.
And then the next section I wanted to talk to about was this the schedule for next year. So as much as anybody knows something that they can't attend, I know that tax deadlines are scheduled a little bit far in advance. Those are good. But, Fayette County spring break, or that's a thing for me, right? Things like that. If you know of any of those, send them to, me, Mabel, Stacy. Let's just make aware, because what I'd like to do in November is get all of the 2019, at a minimum the first half of 2019, on everybody's calendar, because I want to make sure we can drive good attendance. That's all. So nothing we need to do today, but shoot those out if there is some constraint you have, the family vacation to Bali, John, that you take every year, whatever that is.
And our board meeting in November is when?
13th, yes.
Okay, so the LEOs meet on the 8th, and they'll be setting their schedule for the next year as well. They prefer Thursdays. I don't see that there will be any conflict, but I think it would be very helpful if we have things that you know are going to be on your schedule and you can't do, and you're not the only one affected by the spring break here in Lexington, so it is helpful to if we could get those on there.
And as well, ask them, because they'll meet first, if you can make a note, to ask them when they would prefer the joint meeting to be. I think the earlier we do it in the year, just in case we miss it, so we can course correct, would be good. But if they want to do that even in the first quarter, whatever makes sense, we can adjust to that.
The argument to be made for having it in June is the fact that we have all the new state allocations and contracts coming up, and I think typically that's why we chose that time frame, because those do require both the approval of the LEOs and the WIB. But we can look at that.
So let's look for their June meeting. Let's just make that happen. I think that makes sense. I think we did it May last year, June this year, whenever it makes sense.
Yes. And the reason that we originally had it scheduled for May this year was because somebody, and I don't remember if it was the WIB or the LEOs, but one of you all were pushing out your meeting a month just so that we could make it, and we didn't want to push it out 2 months. So But yeah, we'll definitely try to take all that into consideration, and would very much appreciate anybody letting us know what times that you know you will not be available.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm really bad at it because I've done now two of these remotely, or three, but yes, I will try.
Well, just so you know, we're meeting the requirement of being able to see you and you see us, but you've been frozen for about 10 minutes now.
Yeah.
We can hear you.
So I don't know if you know this, but I'm on Broadway in Times Square, and the Frozen musical is right around, so I'm Elsa here, and be frozen.
Okay.
I spelled frozen.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
So we want to report the non or bad schedules for us to.
Stacy is your, yeah, she's your best bet on that.
You want to do a poll for the rest of the board?
Yeah.
What I would like to ask is if you would like to keep it around the same time of the month, around the same day of the week, and around the same time of day, I can go in, figure those dates out. And we can check and see, I can send those out and say, hey, do these dates work for everybody, or are there any blackout dates? And then we can reschedule off of that, but at least it gives us a jumping off point. Okay?
Yeah, I definitely prefer Mondays over Tuesdays, but we did the poll last year, because I travel typically. When we did the poll last year, everybody was pretty adamantly shutting me down and thinking Tuesday was better. So I can do it four times a year, but yeah, if we could just verify the new membership, their preference on the day, that would be wonderful. Awesome. That was it. That was all I had added. John, thank you very much for chit-chatting for me there, and Mabel, and Stacy, staff, thanks for putting everything together and all the work you do.
There is, under other business, before we adjourn, that I want to just mention. As I look and started putting together the agenda for the executive committee, what I don't want to do is turn the executive committee meetings into full board meetings with less members.
Right.
Now, my question is, and I think it's even in the bylaws that the executive committee will review the financial reports, but since we have a very well staffed member finance committee, is that something that you all want to continue to have on there each time? Because in my experience, an executive committee is called and has a meeting when there is business that can't wait and that needs approval until the full board meeting. And so
I mean my recommendation, sitting on both of them, my philosophy for every committee is that the committee makes a report out at the executive or the main committee, that we shouldn't repeat the results or the activities of that committee within the full meeting. So I definitely think that we can raise awareness or make them aware enough that there needs to be a vote, but I'd rather cover these in committee and then essentially just give a cover sheet with at most in these executive meetings. That's my preference.
I agree. And the other thing is, like I said, the same thing, and I'm truly thinking of your all's time and the best use of it. Some of the informational items, you're going to hear it again at the full board meeting.
Right.
And I don't know that it's productive for you to have to sit through that twice. But it's your call. We will put together whatever you want as far as that goes. I just wanted you to think about that because really, like I said, the executive committee's purpose is to be here to handle business that won't wait until a full board meeting. For example, the performance negotiations. Mm-hmm. We had to report back. We have a September 30th deadline to let the state know. So we had to be.
Right. No, I think you're on the right path. My question to you would be, one of the things I changed for 2018 was that I had the executive committee meet less frequently.
Right.
So that we would have more time for people to spend time in committee doing the more detailed work. Does anybody feel like we need to go back to the executive committee meeting 8 times a year and the full board 4 or anything like that? I don't, but I just asked that question.
I'm hesitating to let the members speak, but in my opinion, I don't even think the executive committee necessarily needs, you can have a standing schedule, but if there is not an item that requires action, I really see no purpose for the executive committee, you all taking your time to come in to hear informational items that you're going to hear at the board meeting anyway. So that's what I was asking you to consider.
It seems like the when we reduced the executive committee meetings before, it was because of what you just said, so that we're not basically turning it into a full board meeting with fewer people here.
Right.
So I think what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah.
Then.
So I think what we're saying then is that the finance committee will do a report out. We won't have to review this whole thing in the executive steering committee, but we should be just aware of what's going on. And just sort of leave it as, you know, executive committee meets. I think there's always seems to be an action item. We meet once a quarter, full board once a quarter, and committees once a quarter.
Rather than having Michael do his full spiel each time, if there's something that comes up that's very important or pressing in the finance committee meeting, he could bring that to the attention of the executive committee when we meet.
Absolutely. And that, yeah, I don't want to...
I agree.
That way we're not doing the whole thing, but if there's something that kind of stands out that's
absolutely
different or
if there's
pressing
something
or needs to be known.
Financially that needs immediate attention, then it certainly should be on the executive committee.
Just highlighting it if needed rather than going through the whole thing multiple times.
Right.
That makes sense.
That was all. Like I said, no, I just wanted to think about it.
The other ad I would have is that I'd like for us to figure out technology, like Zoom it, like that's what the state's using for their meetings. Because I think, you know, I appreciate that this is less than 5 miles from my house, but Dolly or others, you know, just participating occasionally, if they could do it remotely, I think in a productive way would be good.
That's all I have.
All right.
Good. And I guess, is there any other discussion from anybody? I'm looking for a motion to adjourn now.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Move forward. Thank you.